So, Michelle.
So, David, it's been a long time between drinks.
It's been a long time. It's been too long.
Yeah, I mean...
We've had some complaints.
We have. There's at least been one.
Well, no. We've had quite a few people on the Twitter feed at iSpied Podcast.
I even had a friend who was like, what's going on?
What's happened?
Yeah.
Are you two... Has something happened?
Yeah, we broke up.
Yeah, we decided to see other podcasts.
Yeah.
Look, the thing is, we finished, the 19th of December we finished recording?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And we thought, 4 weeks will be fine. Yeah. Nothing's going to happen.
It all happened.
Holy crap.
The wheels fell off.
So today, I just want to touch base on what's happened. And then we can expand as we go into the year on these subjects, because some of them are huge.
We need to set ourselves up for a big year.
It's going to be a massive year. And of course, if you do have anything else that we've missed in this episode that you'd like us to talk about, don't forget at iSpied Podcast.
And we also have an Instagram handle.
We're on Instagram. And you know what? The great handle I came up with for this. You're going to love it.
Oh my gosh.
At iSpied Podcast.
It's so easy.
Oh, what the heck. I'm going to go.
Do we have photos of ourselves, or are we going to stay incognito?
We'll just stay the way we are. So, look, I don't have a beard anymore. That's the other thing I got rid of.
I know. It's been so weird.
Yeah. I wore a suit yesterday. It's been, look, the world's gone mad.
The world has gone mad. Let's get stuck in.
Right.
You're listening to I Spy, the long, lazy summer of Australian intelligence.
Want another beer?
All right. All right.
We should probably get back to work, shouldn't we?
Yeah. Hello, welcome to iSpy. My name is Michelle Stevenson. I'm here with David Callan. And, you know, we've been off for a couple of weeks, maybe a month and a half. And literally we've started 2024 with a bang.
Quite literally.
Yes.
Everything seems to be exploding at the moment. I mean, let's start with the Voldemort of global politics at the moment, Israel.
Okay.
He who shall not be named. It goes on. The war is going on. There is some terrible things going on in Gaza. There's some terrible things going politically. But the interesting thing that sort of blew up over Christmas was the IJC.
Literally. Blew up. Do we need to use those words?
No, I don't think we want to use blow up.
Yeah, no.
The thing that percolated up over Christmas was the IJC, was South Africa going to the International Justice Court and saying, we believe this is genocide and it needs to be stopped.
The irony of South Africa.
Yes. All right. But also the irony of Israel turning around and saying, well, we had genocide practice against us. You can't accuse us of that, which is like, you know what? That's like saying that guy stole from me. That means I can't steal from him. You can't say I'm stealing. So the problem we've got here is there is a lot of rhetoric going around that's really unhelpful.
And did you see the IDF undercover, the undercover operatives who went into a hospital, this happened this week, went into a hospital and shot a Hamas, one of the high-ranking Hamas people.
Yes, but it was in the West Bank.
Yeah, in a hospital. They went hidden in cloaks and fake beards and pretended to be Muslims.
Yeah, right. Yep. So this stuff is going on. And it was something I think we touched on last year. At the end of last year when we were talking about the same issue, is Israel is still going to use its Munich-style revenge. There hasn't been anything out of Doha, which is where a lot of the Hamas leadership are. They're in Qatar. Mm. There is a high likelihood that there is going to be assassinations and this kind of undercover stuff from the IDF and from Israeli intelligence. So, I mean, Israel is bubbling up, and I'm pretty sure you and I will be discussing it quite a lot over the next
Oh, you reckon?
Little bit. Might do a couple of episodes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But what about poor Ukraine?
Oh, God. The war that everyone forgot.
Yeah, everyone's forgotten. Yeah,
Mark War. Yeah. If you know your cricket, and I do because I spent most of the summer on my ass watching it, they used to call Mark War Afghanistan. You know, Steve War was the great cricketer. Mark War was an incredible cricketer as well, but he was the forgotten war because they called him Afghanistan
because
he was the forgotten war.
That's great.
Right? So, Ukraine, interesting stuff going
Ukraine
on.
Ukraine is now Mark War.
The interesting thing about Ukraine at the moment is the problem Zelensky has with his defense leader, his defense minister.
Yep.
The head of his – well, is he the minister or is he the head of defense, the defense force? But this is a general – he did really well. Like, his defense of Kyiv and his defense of Kharkov has, like, really bolstered his appeal with the nation, and there's meant to be ructions between him and Zelensky. So there's that problem, which Russia love. Russian propagandists are now turning around going, well, it just goes to prove that Ukraine can't control themselves and they don't know what they'll do. They're going to kill each other and that's why we must stop, right? But flip side of it is the CIA have been using videos to recruit Russian intelligence and military officers to share intelligence, which the video is really interesting. And when I find it, I will put it up on the socials.
Yep.
The other interesting thing, though, is the CIA have basically said that this is really beginning to start to be a bit of an anchor around Putin's neck.
Right.
Now, it's not at the point where it's going to knock Putin out, but it certainly is at a point where Putin is struggling to find traction politically.
Yes.
And it's...
Well, I even wonder if the whole Israel-Palestine stuff has kind of put Putin on the back burner and therefore no one's talking about the war that he wants them to talk about as well.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think part of it is the Ukraine summer counteroffensive wasn't that successful. And in fact, I was reading this morning, the Russians are firing something like 5 shells to every 1 shell that the Ukrainians lob at them.
Yep.
And they're making short inroads in the east. So it's not going well for Ukraine. And it doesn't help that we've got Israel bubbling around now that's taken the limelight. Suddenly that, you know, they become the show that everyone used to watch, but now we've moved on to, you know,
they're bright and shiny.
Ukraine's friends and Israel is Seinfeld.
Your analogies are just failing. This time off is really, really screwed with you.
I just watch cricket. That's all I did the entire time. I just sat there watching the cricket. And, of course, I watched the Super Bowl. NFL, and we will talk about that because it kind of plays into what we talk about. And this is the problem at the moment is there's all of this focus going on Israel, and rightly so. It's kind of right in the middle of everything, particularly when you talk about the Red Sea. What's going on in the Red Sea with the Houthis? They've decided they're going to shut down the Suez Canal. I was talking to a longtime close personal friend, Salty Sea Dog.
Yeah.
Who I had a drink with over Christmas.
Oh,
and by the way, Salty, thanks for the Christmas presents. They were really cool.
Yes, they were actually. T-shirt was amazing.
I love my T-shirt too.
Yep.
And I did drink out of my whiskey shot glass. Now
We will take gifts.
We will take. Yeah. By the way, people, if you want gifts, but I was talking to him about what's going on in the Red Sea and how the Houthis will be trying to block it. The whole thing is a lot of people are saying the Houthis are going to mine the Red Sea and then the Americans don't have any minesweepers, to which Salty basically turned around and went, they don't need minesweepers. They have these things called helicopters that do that job now.
Right.
Because we're like the Australian Navy would not have that kind of fleet airarm capability. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Americans do.
Yeah.
They've got an incredible amount of air support that they've got on the ocean. So the other thing he said is where large military would be using tactical mines that actually stay in place, these things that the Houthis are using are just going to drift into groups. And then once they've sort of clumped up, you just take them out.
Yeah. So the Houthis have even launched, I think, another attack recently this week. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, U.S. President Biden, I think, threatening to go to war with Iran over a drone strike, which took out 3 servicemen, U.S. servicemen, and countless more were injured.
Well, here's the thing about that. That was 3 dead, and I think it was called Fort 22, and it's right on the border of Jordan and Syria, right? It kind of controls that area of operation. Now, the thing is that attack killed 3, injured 40. Since October 7, there's been something like 160 attacks on US facilities in the Middle East.
Yep.
And somewhere between up to around 80 casualties. This is no longer a cold war. This is a hot war.
Yeah.
Now it is.
It's bleeding out.
It's insurgents. It's Houthi rebels.
Yeah.
They're all backed by Iranians, to which the Iranians then vehemently deny. So this again is something we'll be looking at very closely, is the fact that the US has now been dragged back into the Middle East.
Yeah.
And well, dragged back. They've been there ever since the second Gulf War. They've been locked in, but now it's heating up again. So there's a major problem going on there.
Yeah, and I think we really need to do a breakdown on the Houthis and who they are, where they come from, what they stand for, because we haven't really spoken about that in depth.
We haven't really looked at it. And I mean, the interesting part of it is, and it's a great thing. It was a meme I saw when I was tooling around on Reddit and basically said, you know, which Yemen don't we like today? Because if you look at Yemen, it's actually divided up into like 5 different factions.
Mm.
And this is why it is so volatile.
Yep.
Now, of course, the Houthis and where they're located they do have great access to the Red Sea. So we're now struggling to try and work out what we're going to do about the Red Sea. Now, by the way, the political opportunism that was has been sort of brought up, why haven't we sent a ship? Because, A, we don't need to. Australia doesn't need to send a naval asset. And we literally sent intelligence officers over there. And Australia's contribution to the American effort in the Middle East, particularly around Israel and the Red Sea, is Pine Gap.
Yeah.
So if you haven't heard the episode, we did do one about Pine Gap last year, and it's pretty important that we understand that. Of course, there's a lot of people saying it's terrible that we're supporting this awful genocidal effort by Israel. Again, that's the rhetoric that's coming out. That's not my personal opinion. But the important thing to remember as well is we actually do have a responsibility in looking after our own Indo-Pacific region. And also our Navy is struggling at the moment.
Yep.
We're finding it very difficult to recruit people. So that's another thing we need to look at is what's going on with the Australian military at the moment, because we can't find enough people to man the ships.
Well, it's also because we privatized the military and we got rid of a whole bunch of servicemen and women. And then now we want to hire them again. It's just the whole thing has been a mess.
Oh, look, I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, the one thing that got me is the last time I walked into the War Memorial in Canberra, and it's like brought to you by Raytheon. And it's like, what? Hang on. And, and then there's another exhibit and it was like brought to you by Lockheed Martin. And it's like, hang on, when did this become an advertising spot?
Yeah, when did it?
For military industrial.
Unless they donated money, I just don't understand.
Well, that's the thing. They do donate money to these things, but there's also the fact that the Australian government pumped some.
These people died because of these things.
And if you'd like to see more people die, it's like we've taken this edifice that is meant to be a memorial to those who have sacrificed and also a reminder of the folly of war and gone, and by the way, if you'd like more folly of war, please come on down to the War Memorial in Canberra and check out what we can do.
Yeah.
So there's that going on, right? There's a lot of that. Oh, the other thing that has come out of Israel is the accusations of the UNRWA.
Yes, which are quite some serious accusations here. I mean, they have basically accused staff members. I think there was
Between 9 and 12,
Between 9 and 12. Of basically being caught up in the whole Hamas October 7th massacre.
In the October 7th exercise,
They've found text messages, I think, between people. Now, one of them is dead. I think seven of them have been fired and two remain unaccounted for. They don't know who they are. So, these are really serious accusations, which have some evidence behind them. And quite rightly, Australia, along with other countries, have ceased funding to the UN.
Now, the problem with that being that now we've got US, UK, I think Germany, I think a lot of the EU nations, Australia, maybe even Canada.
Yeah.
Who knows, Canada, EU. Sorry about that. The big problem we face here is the fact that with that money not going into Palestine, there is a true refugee crisis going on in there.
Yes.
And also the fact that there's been a lot of instances where UN facilities have actually been targeted for shelling. The problem we've got here, again, it's the rhetoric coming out. Who controls the narrative coming out of Gaza? Who controls the narrative coming out of Israel? Who controls the narrative full stop, right? And again, that's another thing going to have to examine in an entire episode.
Well, Hamas are doing a really good job on controlling the narrative because everyone thinks that, that they're doing an okay job, that they want them to stay in power. So,
well, yeah, that also comes down to the fact that basically your Palestinian on the street doesn't really get to express his opinion because the means of communication are quite controlled.
But also Hamas and the Hamas leaders who have orchestrated the attacks and said they will not stop until every Jew has been killed are sitting pretty in a completely different country.
They're in a totally different country enjoying
The fruits of their own labour, which is taking from the Palestinians.
Yeah, exactly. And the other problem is the Middle East don't want to deal with the Palestinian crisis. They don't, like Jordan don't want them, Egypt doesn't want them. No one wants them.
No.
Right? And that means they've become a pariah. Not just in their own state, but in the general region. And that, of course, creates huge problems because what do we do with these people? There is the flip side of that of most people saying, well, why can't we have the two-state solution? But there's a political move in Israel at the moment, and it's a very strong political move that's saying we don't want a two-state solution. I mean, there was footage coming out of a right-wing conference or convention with a lot of right-wing politicians in Israel basically saying, once we get rid of everyone from Gaza, we can resettle it.
Yep.
And it's like that rhetoric's not helping, right? So So that, again, that's another area we're really going to have to look closely to. China. Right. Now, everyone, China's been pretty quiet.
Yeah, it has actually.
Now, a couple of reasons for that. One, I think China has looked at the Ukraine and what's going on there. Sorry. China has looked at Ukraine. I keep calling it
the
Ukraine.
I know, you keep putting the in front of it.
I can't help it. It's my Cold War affectation.
Yeah.
They watched what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on between Russia and Ukraine, and gone, yeah, well, you know, Taiwan, don't we need to do this?
Yeah, they're keeping quiet because I think they've realised that that's not going to fly.
Well, there's another thing that's going on at the moment that's really important.
Their economy.
Well, their economy is pretty important. They're struggling at the moment.
Really struggling at the moment.
Yeah,
They've had a major building consortium kind of.
I want to say evergreen, but it's not.
But it's mostly because what was happening was that they were building all these buildings that no one was living in, then they were demolishing them, and then they were building them again.
Yeah. It's like literally people sort of turn around about the American military industrial complex, right? So all of these huge military companies that are basically jobs programs.
Yeah.
Right. We made the Americans made the F-35. It's a good plane. It's not as good as the F-16, I don't think. I mean, it has a different role than the F-16 does, but everyone wants F-16s at the moment. But the big thing about it is it's like that's their jobs program. That's why a lot of congressmen, a lot of senators will not mess around with defense spending because that employs a lot of their constituents. Yeah. Same thing in China with real estate. They're literally building buildings and knocking them down and building them and knocking them down just to keep people in work.
Yes.
Right. Doesn't matter if no one lives in there because we employ the builder and then we
employ the demolition. But at some point you've got to realize that you're just putting money into a sinking ship.
Yeah. But
which they have.
Yeah, they have. I mean, the interesting thing about the American one is everyone's saying we don't want to spend – why are we sending all of our money to Ukraine? Why are we sending all of our money to Israel? Technically, you're not. Right. The Americans, when they spend money on defense – they're giving the money to their own defense contractors to make that equipment. So all of the ammunition, all the artillery shells they've been making and selling to the Ukraine, I'll get it right one day.
Yeah.
What's going on there is essentially they was putting money back into their own economy.
Yes.
The great thing is the rhetoric you can come out with is, oh, we're giving money away. No, we're not actually. We're sort of spending it on ourselves.
But also by holding some kind of peace in the Middle East, you are kind of helping put a hold on people showing up at your doorstep looking for a place to live because their place is no longer tenable.
Yeah. I mean, quite literally, I could imagine that the rents are pretty cheap in Gaza at the moment.
Yes.
Getting back to
China.
Well,
there's no buildings. But yes, the rent would be cheap.
It'd be very cheap.
The air is free.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, here's the interesting thing about China is China, the PLA have actually had a bit of a purge.
Oh.
They've been knocking off a lot of the leaders that they weren't happy with.
I'd hate to be the one disappointing the PLA, wouldn't you?
Look, I'm sorry, mate, but Wang, we've decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
Would you mind just standing against this wall?
Put the blindfold on.
Yeah, put the blindfold on. Yeah. It's a surprise. You're going to love it.
Yeah, it's a cake.
Trust me. It's hilarious, right? So I don't think it's that purgy.
No.
But they are definitely going through the PLA and going, what are we, where's the
what are we doing? What are we doing here?
Where's the deadwood?
Yeah.
Where can we clean this up? How can we tighten it up?
Because they're doing a new organizational chart.
Exactly. Now, interestingly enough, one of the things that has come out, I've read a lot of articles over Christmas about this, how the PLA on paper look amazing.
Yeah.
But actually, in reality, they're a very inexperienced army. They're actually or military defense department entirely. Really, other than a couple of spats, fisticuffs, literally fisticuffs on the border of India, they haven't actually done much. And there is a thing, I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, and it came out with the whole war crimes thing with Australia, the SAS over in Afghanistan. Armies do need to be blooded, right? Once an army is actually been in combat, you know what your army can do and you know where you can improve your army. Again, going back to the Houthis, this is one of the really important things to remember about Yemen and the Houthis. They've been fighting for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So if America go, well, we're going to go in there and clear it up. Well, no, you're not, because they have literally been fighting there. They know every inch of that territory. They know where to put it. They can literally put their artillery in a spot, fire off a salvo, and then be gone in minutes. Right? So this is the thing. China at the moment are really going, all right, what do we need to do? Because of that, they kind of cooled the rhetoric on we're going to invade Taiwan. The flip of that being Taiwan had their election recently. They got a new president.
Oh, do they?
They do. They got a new president.
Who knew?
And of course, China all the way through the election went, don't you dare invite, don't you elect him. Don't you dare. you elected him. How very dare you? To which Xi Jinping then turned around and said, and if any of you congratulate him, it'll be smacks before bedtime and no dessert. So what did Ferdinand Marcos, the son of the former Marcos president of the Philippines, do? Sent him a note.
Yeah.
Congrats, man. Well done. Join the prayers club, baby. Yeah. And of course, now China is, they're sort of cranking up their rhetoric against the Philippines.
Yeah, of course. On a side note, I read this really, I had no idea that Malaysia rotated their kings.
Yeah, that's right. They've got a rotating king system.
I know. Every 5 years, they've got a new king.
Every 5 years? Yeah.
It's so random.
You pull the short straw out and go, I know. Oh, okay, I'll do it.
Did you know this?
I knew vaguely, but actually I saw the article that you posted and went, how cool is that?
Yeah, they just got their new king. So they rotate the system. Apparently the sitting king never really meant a lot, but nowadays they're finding that they're holding a lot more of the peace and the conversations.
Yeah. Well,
turbulent times.
The interesting thing about that king, the Sultan of, was it Johor, I think it was? But he essentially, he's a businessman. He's got a lot of real estate power stations. He's a billionaire. Good friend of Anwar, Prime Minister Anwar, which is, it's good if your head of state and your titular, your country's leader are good friends. Now, the interesting thing about that is it's like they're all sultans.
Yeah.
So I think there's 15 provinces and 9 of them have sultans. And it's actually just, you know, roll the dice. Sultan number 4, you're up. You got 5 years to get the job done. I wonder, I mean, the interesting thing about the new guy is he's basically turned around and said, right, graft and corruption, let's go. Let's get amongst it. And I don't know if that was a let's go and clean it up or let's go and see how much money we can make. Yep. But I think it's the former rather than the latter. But yeah, really interesting thing going on there. So with China, I think we're still going to have all this crazy South China Sea stuff going on. They will be having their vessels squirting Filipino ships with water and interrupting the poor guys that are trying to relieve the blokes that are stuck on that rusting hulk in the middle of the ocean. So that's the thing. China at the moment's kind of biding its time. And as you said, their economic situation isn't great.
Yep.
And because of that, I think they're sitting back and taking stock.
Yep.
Now, I want to talk about Australia Day.
Okay.
Want to talk about Australia Day because
Invasion Day.
Whatever you want to call it about. Say, because funnily enough, I remember I was up in Coffs Harbour for New Year's because that's what I do.
Yeah.
Hanging out with my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law.
Yep.
I turned around to my brother-in-law on New Year's Eve and went, so what do you think the controversy about Australia Day is going to be this year? And we both went, ha, 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 of course there'll be. And, of course, we had a controversy.
Yeah.
Now, the whole thing, I don't know, did you see Nemesis on Monday night?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, God.
Yes, I know. Everyone's been talking about it.
Yep. Watch it just so you can hear Malcolm Turnbull say fuck off. I mean, I've heard him say it to me, but
that's because you stalk him on the ferry all the time.
I follow him on a ferry. Yep. No. So one of the interesting things was they had a great old laugh about how many flags Tony Abbott would put. Yeah, how the flags at all of his press conferences,
they
were more and more and more and more. And personally, I think that's why Woolworths stopped selling flags, because as soon as Tony was out, it's like,
well, no one was buying them.
No one's buying flags anymore. The interesting thing about that was, it was a bit of political opportunism for Peter Dutton to get up and go, oh, how dare you? It's, you know, you're Australian. Australians should be able to celebrate that one. Well, nothing is stopping Australians from doing that. The problem was when we had the attacks on Woolies in, I think it was Brisbane?
Yep.
Yeah. Right. And also someone trying to burn one down with a marine flare. By the way.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, guys, marine flares don't burn things. They just make a lot of light.
Also, can we just be clear? Woolworths would not do something because they ideologically agree with it. They would absolutely do it because it makes commercial sense.
If there was bucks in it, they'd be selling it.
Oh, 100%. When was the last time you saw people buy Australian flags or Australian paraphernalia? You just don't see it anymore.
I can tell you the last time I saw it, and it was when my wife's cousins from the United States, my cousins-in-law, I like to call them, when they were here and they were buying Australian flag tattoos, they were buying Australian, like anything with an Australian flag on it.
But not on Australia Day, and Australians won't buy it. We're becoming less kind of progressive when it comes to, or less kind of into showing our allegiance to the flag.
We're less wowser than we used to be. I mean, there was the groundswell with Australia Day, and of course, as everyone knows, Australia Day became a national public holiday in 1994. Right now, the date's changed and all that sort of stuff. And if you want to change the date, that's fine. If you don't want to change the date, I don't
care. I just think we should make it the third Monday in January. Yeah. So then we always have a public like a long weekend because it just falls all over the shop. And sometimes you've got a Wednesday off or,
yeah.
But like give us a public, like a long weekend public holiday.
So again, growing up as a child, I don't really remember celebrating Australia Day. What I remember about Australia Day is one, my great uncle Bertie every year would be rowed ashore at Circular Quay wearing a New South Wales Rum Corps uniform because I am descended from George Johnson, yep. who was the first white man to set foot in Sydney Cove, according to legend.
Law. Right? According to law.
Essentially, he was actually carried ashore by two convicts.
Yep.
The other thing is on the, I think it was 1806, the Rum Rebellion, which was on Australia Day, the 26th of January, when he, George Johnson, went to Government House and arrested Governor Bligh. You're right. So again, I celebrate it because it's a coup that we were involved in. But the whole thing with it, and it's really interesting, is it's also shown that there are extreme elements. The fact that, you know, we need to boycott Woolies, right? That's fine. Boycott Woolies. We don't mind that if that's the way you feel. But when it becomes like a physical attack on the premises, this becomes a problem, which indicates there is an extreme element out there. Which brings us to my favourites at the moment, the Atama Nazis.
The Atama Nazis.
Oh, my God. Great. They were hilarious. I don't know if you saw the story.
No.
Right. Okay, so Australia Day, the Nazis were going to go into the city and have a bit of a march.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were those classic Nazis all in black, wearing the black hats and the black masks. The same guys that
if you truly believe in a cause, wouldn't you just show your face?
Exactly.
So something says to me that you don't truly believe in it or you're a little embarrassed by it.
Well, there's also the thing that they would say, and quite rightly so, we're covering our faces because we don't want ASIO to know who we are. Sorry,
well,
guys.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah, but sorry, guys, if you're on social media exchanging
stuff,
already know who you are. Now, interestingly enough, it was Tom Sewell.
Yeah.
The boy from Baldwin. Now, this is a Melbourne thing, funnily enough. Right, so this
totally guy. Totally a Melbourne thing. You
know, it's totally a Melbourne thing. Now, everybody is sort of like going, well, why did they come to Sydney? Now, what happened was on Australia Day, they got on the train in Artarmon, so North Sydney, and then they got down to the train station at North Sydney where the police got on the train and kicked them all off.
Okay.
Now, Tom Baldwin was served with they served him with a document that basically said you are not allowed to march in the city. So in the Sydney City Council area until 23:59 Australia Day. So 1 minute to midnight, you can go down into the city and march all you want.
Yep.
But we don't want you in there because you are going to cause trouble. Now, the guy kept saying, well, who do I complain to and whose signature is on? And the poor copper standing there just like went, mate, I'm just doing my job.
Yep.
Feel free to march around North Sydney. Now, if you don't live in Sydney, North Sydney is what we call our minor CBD. There are three CBDs in Sydney, essentially.
Parramatta.
Parramatta, Sydney CBD, and, of course, North Sydney CBD, which on a public holiday or weekend
is like tumbleweeds.
Is a ghost town.
Yep.
Cowboys wouldn't ride through there. It's like, so they basically went on their march through North Sydney where no one saw them. Now, the next day, they went to a park in Tarramurra.
Oh, God.
And they were going to have a picnic. And again, the police told them to move on. They had a number of attempts to have these meetings and they were just basically
And what were
on.
They mad about?
Australia. Not being Australia anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the usual thing you get from the
right
wing.
I know, but it's like, what are you mad about?
Well, what is it? The National what are they called? The National Action Network? NAN. They're called NAN.
Of course they are.
So essentially, Tom Sewell brought up a bunch of guys from Victoria, hooked up with the right-wing guys, let's call them the Nazis. Why not? They won't mind. The National Socialist Movement here. Yep. That's it, the National Socialist Network, not NAN. Right, so the Sydney chapter, some guys from Brisbane, some guys from Adelaide, and some guys from Tasmania were all in this group.
This sounds like a lot of men who have nothing but time on their hands.
Yeah, well, you know.
Like maybe like crochet or...
Yeah.
Get a hobby. Just get a hobby.
Do what I did over Christmas. My wife gave me a picture that I had to make out of Lego.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It's a photo of my sons and I. It was one I took years ago.
And you made it out of Lego?
All little one dot pieces of Lego.
Oh, my God. She really wanted to keep you away from her.
Cricket's on, David. Here's your Lego. Thanks, love. Just, yeah. My fingers have calluses. But, right, you just do that. Play with Lego.
Yep.
Now, the thing is, a lot of people are saying that what it was a recruitment drive. Pretty much the National Socialist Network in Victoria have kind of run out of recruiting options down there. If you're a National Socialist and you live in Victoria, you're already in the group.
Yeah.
All right? So they basically gone, well, let's go to Sydney because it's an untapped resource, which is very true. At the moment, there doesn't appear to be a very well-organized chapter here.
Yeah.
And I think that was Sewell's option, was he was coming up here to try and build his network. The thing is again, I think it comes down to that whole thing with, you know, the lack of wowserism we have in Australia at the moment is it's like, yeah, guys, we just don't care about that.
Yeah.
There are people out there. And again, it's a very vocal minority. These guys make a lot of noise. But the thing is, they're not effective in what they're trying to – the change they're trying to make.
Because I still don't know what it is they're mad about.
Oh, immigration, woke – yeah, that's the word I always love. It's coming out more and more. This is woke. This is woke. This is, and it's like, guys.
I know. There was a dad who was espousing the similar kind of rhetoric because one of the schools, an old established boys' school
I know
in
it well.
Sydney, has now decided they're going to go co-ed, and there was tears from grown men. One man saying that it's because we're following the woke ideology and that toxic masculinity is being thrown about, and so that maybe we just want women in schools.
Maybe the schools realise that we can make more money if we have both sexes in the school. That's the bottom line. This is the thing that always gets me. Is
how about we just are able to have a nuanced discussion about things without being taking a side or being about something other than what it is?
Exactly. Right. Now, one last thing I want to touch on.
Okay.
It's the biggest storm in a teacup I've ever heard.
Okay. I love a storm in a teacup.
Tay-Tay.
I love Tay-Tay.
Tay-Tay. No, well, how dare she?
The NFL.
Have a boyfriend that plays football. How very dare she? One guy's actually come out that it proves that Kelsey is gay.
Yeah.
Because why would a man want to marry or go out with a woman who's 34 years old and she can't have children anymore? She's too old.
This is where the incels are coming to the fore. An American sport commentator did, and fabulous, it's kind of on my Twitter handle as well. Maybe we'll share it on the @iSpied Twitter handle. He did this fabulous kind of breakdown of why grown men should not be mad at Taylor Swift.
But essentially, it's Taylor Swift there. There's a photo of Taylor Swift wearing the Nope t-shirt. You know, Nope, not again. And the O has Trump's hair. She's already come out and said, I don't like Donald Trump.
Yes.
That's fine. You're allowed to do that. But the thing is, Donald Trump and his followers
have now declared a holy war on Taylor Swift.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one thing that we are going to be looking at very closely this year.
Especially in the lead up to the American election.
It's an election year. There's still the stuff to go on with the classified docs case.
He is leading the Republican primary. There is no doubt he will become the Republican nominee.
Yeah, but the other thing is, will he have enough money to do it? All right, so because he's already lost $83 million to –
yeah, which she was only looking for $20 million, but because he wouldn't shut up, they gave him $83.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, the fraud case in New York, the fact that Trump, the Trump organization is up for it. What was really interesting about that was basically if he'd shut up, it'd be done now.
Yeah.
But because he wouldn't shut up and he kept saying, well, you know, you can't do this and it's a witch hunt, and basically the district attorney went – oh, by the way, we've now uncovered all this other stuff that you've been doing since the trial started. So it's like that's going to be huge.
Yeah, and other little things that have kind of been bubbling away.
Yeah.
I mean, the Australians unmasked the Russian hacker behind one of our big hacks and named him and put some sanctions on this lone man. So we'll talk about that more broadly because I think we want to touch on kind of cyber and hacking and what it means for global entities.
Yeah. Well,
so we'll touch on that, but also we'll be diving deeper into Israel, of course, and the conflict there. The Houthis, we'll definitely do a deep dive on the Houthis.
We've got to do a dive on the Houthis because the history behind that's phenomenal, and also the fact that it is a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran is something that really needs to be explored.
Yes. And another thing is China kind of broadening their horizons into Papua New Guinea and PNG kind of saying, well, yeah, maybe you can kind of train our cops, and Australia going, no, it's all okay. We've got this.
Let's Belt and Road it.
Yeah, like,
there's Australia with a set of braces on going, yeah.
So China really kind of broadening their horizons when it comes to which tiny little island in the South Pacific or Pacific they're going to
Bottom line, I got to tell you, really, honestly, seriously, 2024 is going to be an absolutely massive one.
And we want to be start getting a few more guests on, I think.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. Because, you know, I just can't do another year just talking to you.
I just want to get Malcolm Turnbull in here so he can tell me to fuck off again.
Great. I want to see that, and I hope he wears that leather jacket.
Only in the leather jacket, or we won't have him.
Okay.